How would you define the quarterback position? The QB Docs podcast has been created to give players, parents, coaches, and fans the tools to better equip themselves of how to answer this simple but complex question. Whether you are a dad to a youngster or a collegiate quarterback looking for an advantage, this podcast is for you. The QB Docs will bring on the sharpest minds of the game to help you succeed on and off the field. From coaches, players, and medical professionals, the QB Docs are tying all aspects of the quarterback position and giving out the tools for what it takes to not only be a successful player, but to be a successful person. If you think of a quarterback as someone who can simply throw a football, you are strongly mistaken, and we are here to answer the question of why. Hey guys, welcome back with the QB Docs podcast. I'm Doc Dusty. I'm joined here with Doc Drew. And, you know, we bring on a very interesting guest today, someone that has been around sports and comes from a different perspective for a lot of our guests today, and that's the sports psychology world. So with that being said, we want to welcome Dr. Pete Temple to the podcast.
Thank you, guys. I'm happy to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Pete, you started your degree off at DePaul University, and you went on to earn your doctorate in clinical psychology from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Now, just real quick, dive in just a little bit as to maybe why you went into psychology and what took you that route.
Well, I went into psychology. It was a bit of a meandering road, to be honest with you. I was at DePaul, as you say, and I know you guys are from Indiana originally, I think. And, it's a little school, Greencastle, Indiana, so liberal arts school. So I was just kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do and what I found enjoyable and challenging. And I always was drawn to psychology. And in high school, in the summer, I coached and I did those kinds of things. Got out of DePaul and thought, okay, I guess I need to go get a real job. And back in that time, this was in like the late 80s, kind of the idea was if you need to go into finance or economics or something like that. So I got a job in banking and I was really awful at it. I was very bad, and it was a wake up call. And so I really thought back and realized, I love those classes because that's kind of just a good fit for me. Always thought I would enjoy coaching. And for me, psychology was kind of a combination of working with people and kind of, I look at even in clinical practice as it more of a coaching model than a therapy kind of a thing. And so that just really, all of a sudden it just clicked. It's like, okay, that's why I like these classes. So then I decided to invest the time and go back and get my degree and go into practice. And that's kind of how I found my way there.
Really cool. And, I think we talked about this, but, DePaul University is what's at the home of the garlic cheeseburger over there.
What right. is it called? Marvin's.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there.
I bet. Sure. Oh yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. as we talk to a lot of players, coaches, parents in the football world, and specifically quarterbacks. Sure. Right. So. Right. From your perspective, as far as the sports psychology side, maybe what's the biggest thing for maybe some of these young quarterbacks or young parents to understand as far as maybe helping their child strive toward being a really competitive or really good at their sport?
Yeah, well, I think for really any sport, any athlete, but certainly quarterback, the demands that they have are kind of second to none. And I think what I would tell parents, and what I do tell parents when I talk to groups of students and athletes and schools and things like that, is to just understand that, we talk about the importance of the mental game. Everybody does. How many conversations start with, fill in the blank sport is at least 50% mental. And I've never heard anybody debate that. I've never heard anyone say, I think it's maybe more like 25. If anything, they'll say it's more. And so you have a position like the quarterback where it's so cerebral and everyone tells you how important the mental game is. But my experience has been, we don't systematically develop it. We talk about it and then we go to the gym to get, bigger, faster, stronger. And we go work out with experts like you to get your mechanics solid. And the feeling is that this mental toughness is just something that, you ought to have. And I think, when you've got a quarterback who's kind of just expected to be a leader, often that's just the pressure that they have, that they should have this, you know, mental game that just naturally, and you know, you don't necessarily throw a spiral naturally, you work at it. And it's the same with the mental game. So what I tell parents is, if you think it's important, you know, ask yourself if you feel like you know how to help your athlete develop that. And if you don't, then, you know, that shows you an area of their training that is maybe being neglected a little bit.
Pete, where does that start? I mean, is that, as you brought up mental toughness,
right?
How do you develop mental toughness? I mean, from a psychology perspective, from a scientific perspective, do you have to be introduced to some of those things at an early age, where you learn how to lose or you learn how to endure through certain adverse times? When, what, from your perspective, from your, you know, professional perspective, right, what does that look like?
Well, that's a great question. I think you do start early. I don't work personally with athletes. Well, I do and I don't. I don't work one-on-one with athletes until they get to about the eighth grade. I want them to learn the fundamentals of their sport. I want them to, you know, not give them too much to think about. But I think, you know, you have to develop, you have to understand, just like anything else, there's, you know, there's fundamentals, as you know, to being, to throwing the football and to just playing football. You need to, if you don't understand the fundamentals of a game, you can't play it. So you have to understand that. I consider the fundamentals kind of the what's and the why's. What are the fundamentals? Why are they important? But athletes don't want to just play, they want to excel. And so then you take those fundamentals and you build them into mechanics. You know, a fundamental being a quarterback is to throw it. But if you throw it right with good mechanics, you're going to get better performance. So I think you begin by, you know, trying to give athletes a sense of, you know, what are the fundamentals. When athletes talk about it, if a coach says, asked me to come talk to his team about mental toughness, I'll usually explore that with them. What would you like me to talk about, or where do you struggle? And if they just keep persisting with just, you know, give them the old mental toughness talk, I realize that they don't necessarily have a good grasp, at least in my opinion, of it either. Because mental toughness doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean any one thing. And so when we tell an athlete, hey, you're not mentally tough, go work on that, they're just become aware that we're not happy with something. We think they're lacking something. And when they say, okay, coach, or okay, dad, go say, I got to work on this, they don't have a clue. So we start with the fundamentals. And I think the fundamentals of a good mental game, over the years, I've narrowed it down to five things. I think you've got to be able to, every athlete needs to know how to manage their confidence, right? Not let the tail wag the dog. They need to be in control of that confidence and understand that there's going to be highs and lows, and they need to be able to sail through it without their confidence riding those waves. The second is what I call mindset. Mindset's used generally a lot of times, and that's fine, but for me, mindset specifically about knowing how to set, settle, and anchor the mind. Setting the mind is knowing how to direct your thinking. So if you throw an interception and you let your thoughts go to, I probably just cost us the game, that's going to create a different reaction than if you, you know, just work through and say, I need to pick up the safety, we'll get the ball back, and you know, away you go. That's going to have a much less kind of debilitating or distracting impact on you. So setting the mind has to do with knowing how you need to be thinking before a game, during a game, and after a game. And then the settling the mind is, there are those moments, right, where you throw that pick and the emotions get you and they take you quickly away. So settling is knowing how to kind of use some tools, sometimes as simple as a breath, to just kind of slow yourself down, tell yourself you're fine, and then you grab your thoughts again and you can get yourself back in the box. And then that kind of anchoring part of mindset is to you know, really have a good, I want to make sure every athlete I have has kind of what we call a sports credo. Why do you play the game? Why do you love the game? What are the tough parts about it? What do you do when those things happen? Because there's going to be ups and downs, and that kind of keeps you anchored. So that's, you know, kind of the mindset. The next fundamental would be emotion. It's why you love the game. It's why I love playing sports. But often emotion takes athletes out of the box. I said it's usually one of two varieties. Gas on, so I make a mistake and now I'm just playing mad. I'm just going to try and chase that mistake down. It's kind of the equivalent of the fight response, if you think of it as fight or flight. The other is gas off, right? You see this, I think, a lot with quarterbacks where they make that mistake, they have that interception, and now they're too much in their head. They're worried about making another mistake. So what are they doing? They're holding the ball a little longer. They're trying to just aim it in there rather than just trusting themselves and letting it fly. The fourth fundamental is resilience. It's bounce. You know, I think the most important speed we go, you know, the combine was just recently, we measure 40s, we measure shuttles and three cones. I think the most important speed for an athlete is how quickly can you go from one play to the next, right? If it's a bad play, how quickly can you just mentally shift so that play is out of the box and the next play is in there and you're unaffected by what just happened? Because the only play you can make is the next one. And then the last is a little bit of a different fundamental, but it's what we call drive. And drive is using the mental gear to really turn and maximize. I was reading what you guys do, and it's clear you want to help athletes maximize their, you know, their potential and get as much as they can out of it. And drive is about using your mentality. The athletes work so hard in the gym and in their instruction, and we want to get the most out of it. So that's what emphasizes good goal setting and understanding motivation and things like that. So it's a long, maybe rambling answer a little bit, but you start with the fundamentals like anything else. And then when you understand what those are, you can commit to starting to develop them and turn them into solid mental mechanics.
No, I think that what you just said is gold. I mean, if for all of our listeners out there, you need to rewind the last 5 minutes and go back and take notes on those five things and the specific parts of those five things, because I think that's more important than any physical trait that we ever talk about are those five things that he just mentioned.
Yeah. And I think a part of it too is I think often this stuff gets overlooked. If, you know, I'm by no means am I putting you to the side at all, Pete, but I think sometimes, like you said, everyone gets so caught up in field work, lifting, watching film, but this whole mindset piece is arguably the most important part, like you said, from square one. And, you know, I don't know from our experience, from that very top part that you said, managing confidence.
Right.
I think to some degree, I think that every athlete would be, I think I'm safe to say that every athlete would at some point in their career say, yeah, like my confidence at some point has dwindled, right? Where I've struggled with confidence, you know? So that being said, if maybe I'm a player out there right now and I have a coach that every practice is just ripping me up and down, tearing me a new one, telling me I'm awful. Right. And you might have even had some players like this that you've had to work with.
Sure.
Right. What's your advice to those guys to try to manage their confidence?
Well, I think with tough coaches, and you guys will maybe relate to this, I believe it was attributed to an assistant coach at Indiana when Bobby Knight was there. And he talked about kind of giving him what they call the screen door approach. Because sometimes you got coaches and they're just loud, you know, being abusive is a different thing, but you know, sometimes athletes will just say, you know, he hates me, you know? And so we talk about, well, listen for what he's saying, you know, listen through that screen door, anything that doesn't feel like it fits or that seems like it's a little bit over the top. Just imagine that screen, just catching it, listen for what'll make you a better player and what elements of coaching come through, because you're going to play. If you aspire to continue to move and go up to the next level, you know, you don't get to necessarily, you know, it's a staff of coaches, and sometimes you're going to have the yellers and you've got to know how to listen to it and not just assume if somebody's angry, he's telling me he's not pleased with me, or if somebody is, you know, loudly instructing me, he's telling me, you know, that I'm not good. That's where you have to kind of wall your confidence off a little bit and know what the kind of the mechanics of confidence are, so that something external to you doesn't just become completely discombobulating. You know, if you're not anchored to a solid sense of what your confidence is and know how it works, a bad series or a bad throw can, you know, hurt your confidence. When you have that, what we talk about is wanting to develop robust confidence that, yeah, it'll shift a little bit. Everybody goes through stretches where they don't feel they're playing great. Their confidence is down. But the key is, it's just like if you're not throwing well and you understand the mechanics, you're going to go through and you try to figure out, where am I off? What do I need to do? And if you understand it, you get yourself straightened out and you get back on track. And I like to think that the athletes that we work with can do the same thing with their confidence.
Absolutely. You know, Pete, sitting here talking to you, it sounds like you talk to a wide variety of athletes from many different cultural backgrounds, socioeconomic statuses. You know, this whole idea of just having a mental game and mental capacity, is someone born with that, or is it nature versus nurture? I want to geek out on this, because
sure,
talking to a professional in this arena about this. So Well, for example, if I'm a player that comes from a tough background, tough home life, maybe I haven't developed some of those things. I don't have much confidence in my parents are abusive, but I still want to be a great athlete. Cause you see some of these players, a lot of them that are playing at the highest levels come from pretty rough backgrounds. So how does that happen? Where in this realm, where in this continuum is it nature versus nurture as far as this mental game? And how do you go about seeking out how to help those specific individuals better their mental game?
Yeah. Well, I think one thought came to mind as I listened was, sometimes those backgrounds create some of the mental, skills and the mechanics that we want. For instance, resilience, comes to mind. Sometimes players and athletes come out of tough situations have become, and because they've had to be extremely, resilient. But I think in terms of kind of, the nature nurture, what I say is that the mental game is like anything else. You've worked with athletes that are just, what we would say just country strong. They're just strong. They're naturally strong versus somebody that's maybe not something that's as natural or that kind of, natural athleticism. I think we all get a kind of a bucket of ability, and some of them are bigger than others in certain areas. But what I would say is, regardless of where you've come from, we want to help, kind of target the mental game and not just assume they either have it and then leave them go. That's what I think sometimes happens is we just hope, you'll figure it out or you've got it. So whether it's, if it was somebody that was country strong, I'd still say get in the weight room, because then you're going to become special. You're going to use that and you're going to become special. Somebody that maybe isn't as strong naturally has got to get in there and work so that they can, get to where they need to. I think of the mental game that way too. I see athletes sometimes, my son was a football player and he had a quarterback who's, a best friend and playing down at SEMO. And, that kid just had natural resilience. He could throw a pick and it'd be like, yeah, so what? We'll get the ball back and I'm going to take it right down and score. And a lot of times he did. So you can have that, but when it's natural and you don't understand it, you don't maximize it. That's why I think it's important to systematically develop the mental game with everybody, regardless of where they've come from or how naturally, gifted they seem to be, because we can't take it for granted.
Yeah. And this is something that came up yesterday in a podcast that we were doing. But this whole idea of parents taking their kids out of hard situations,
right,
make them maybe feel good in the moment. Right. And maybe if they're in an uncomfortable situation with a coach, or maybe it's they're not getting enough playing time. But how do parents reinforce this mental game? And then also, is it possible for them to take away from the mental game of their child too? Like, what can the parent do to help guide their child along the way from a mental game standpoint?
Right. Well, I think, the way the book is written is really to hopefully be something an athlete can pick up and pull something from, or a parent can pick up or pull something from, or a coach. And what I think parents also, need to understand, kind of how the mental game works. If all you're ever doing is telling your kid that you're the best player on the team, doesn't matter. Coach is an idiot. If he doesn't play you, you're the best. You're not building their confidence. You're building a house of cards. And so when they understand that, that really true confidence comes from thinking not just I'm the greatest, although affirmations can be fine, but, kind of the three P's of confident thinking, it's about being positive, not just thinking positive, but thinking about doing something rather than avoid something. It's about process, right? A lot of times parents will, I think often with our heart in the right place, try to talk about, you're going to score a goal or you're going to get a touchdown. It's all those are outcome things, right? You can have a great game and not score. You can hit the ball right on the button five times and be 0-for-5. So we talk about process. And so I think when parents understand that, they can change the way they interact with their athlete, and in so doing, help begin to build some of these fundamentals. I said, I don't work with really young kids, but I think, you know, I've done little clinics because I think when they're little, you can start building that foundation of thinking process rather than outcome. Don't think I got to get a hit. Think I got to go up there and be aggressive, you know, things that are controllable and that you can do. So I think parents can, by learning a little bit about the mental game themselves, could help their athlete develop it. But I agree with you. And if I could go off easily and fill up the rest of our time talking about the damage that can be done by, you know, some parents do this. I don't want to say that it's the majority, but, you know, if your son or daughter doesn't make a team and you go to the superintendent and make a fuss and then they get on the team, that's not really helping them. So, you know, that can be damaging because ultimately life will get to a point where it won't work that way. And if they're not ready for that, that'll be a kind of a wake up call.
Right. So sports in the end is just setting you up for life. Right. And I think that leads me to my next point too, of, you know, this idea of social media is not going away. Right. And right. Athletes always comparing themselves to other athletes, good or bad, you know, right. Maybe what are some strategies that, you know, you've given some of your athletes that you've worked with in regards to social media? I mean, on one end of this, on one of the spectrum, you can say, yeah, social media is good because you can maybe compare yourself to the athlete, but use that as motivation to go and be or chase down, you know, that athlete who, right, quote unquote, might be better than you. But yeah, then if you're using it negatively, which we talked about this yesterday too, of, you know, then that's obviously going to hurt you. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, social media is a mixed bag. For one, it eats time. Like, you know, you can't imagine those things literally were designed with, you know, people who understood addiction, and it works. You know, you get a like and you want to check it out. You hear a ding and you want to go to it. It's Pavlovian. So, you know, it can eat up a lot of time that can be used getting your studies done and doing some things that are more productive. So I'm always trying to talk to my athletes and my kids that are athletes about that aspect of it. But that social comparison is something, whether it's, you know, Facebook and it's not even an athlete, you know, what people tend to put up is their best self. And you look at that and you think, oh my gosh, look, this family's always going to Europe on these trips and we don't go to Europe. And it, you know, starts to make you feel kind of bad, but it's not a real comparison. And so I think you've got to get, you know, be a little careful about developing these kind of whatever Twitter or Instagram rivalries where you're, you know, comparing, because what people are putting up there is meant to be kind of make a splash. So those are the cautions I usually talk with athletes about. I think there's some positives. I think there's some, you know, training elements. I know my son, as I mentioned, he's plays football. He just finished his career up at Butler. You know, he follows a guy like the Foot Doctor and, you know, these things, and he saves files that have footwork drills in it and technique stuff. And that's something that he really spends time with. And I think he believes it's helped him. And then there's the kind of the motivational aspect. You know, if you're paying attention to what all your rivals are doing, you know, if it's a high school athletes and it's this back and forth, that can get a little out of hand. But if you really admire a certain quarterback and you want to follow them for motivation and things like that, I think that can, you know, be a good way to kind of stay on track with your training and stay motivated.
Yeah. Absolutely. So Pete, we just heard that you released your book last Wednesday.
Yep.
Playing It in the Box. If you, right. Yeah, listeners, if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. We haven't had the chance to read it yet because it came out. So it was.
Yeah, winter. It just came out. Yeah.
So we're definitely going to check that out. But what are some of the other things that you talked about in your book? Because you gave us the five principles
right,
of mindset. But what are some other main points that you touched on in your book?
Yeah. So it's the title of the book is Playing in the Box. And I think it's the subtitle that really captures it, because the subtitle is a practical guide for helping athletes to develop their mental game. And it really was meant to be something that could be read that was presented in a straightforward manner. Like I said, we talk about the mental game. We just talk about it like it's this kind of mysterious thing. So a big part of it, as you mentioned, was I wanted to break that down and talk about the fundamentals of it. You know, those five things, you know, managing your confidence and mindset, managing kind of your emotions and the resilience, and then that drive, and really break those down and, you know, kind of not only explain what those are fundamentally, but then how you develop them, what can you do to improve your confidence and take control of it? How do you become better at managing your emotions? So it was meant to take it from that fundamental standpoint and help athletes and parents and coaches understand how to turn those into strong mental mechanics, just like you want strong throwing mechanics. And so that's a big part of the book. The introduction talks a little bit about what I call the unbalancing of athletes that we're dealing with. And that's part of why I think really learning how to balance that out with the mental game. Because when I was playing sports and I was 14, I played whatever sport was in season. We trained, but the training wasn't anything like it was now in terms of the physicality, and the same thing with lessons. We weren't, there weren't all these camps and 7-on-7. I was a quarterback back in the day, and we weren't doing 7-on-7s. And so now there's this explosion of these things, which I think is awesome. And so we're getting these unbelievable athletes as far as their physicality and their skills are just at a whole nother level. But because we're still, like it was the case back in the 80s for me, not doing anything with the mental game, that mental part is the foundation. And if those two other sides are just exploding, I see athletes sometimes and they're so frustrated because they work so hard and they're not getting the results they want, or they're feeling so much pressure because, they're getting all this elite training and everything. And what happens is they double down on the, more time in the gym, schedule an extra lesson. It's the mental foundation there that's what needs to be shored up. So I kind of present that case. That just happened naturally. This isn't neglect or anything. We just, we never really thought a lot of it. It's for this particular of the three gears, the physical, the technical, and the mental, this one's upside down. This one you get when you get to the top. If you're a professional athlete, there's all kinds of skills coaches. If you're on the PGA Tour, all kinds of guys like me. Why has it trickled down like the physical and the technical training has? I don't exactly know, but we can do better than that. So I talk about my goal, as I said, I wanted to help develop a complete athlete, physical, technical, mental, all three gears turning in unison so that they can maximize their experience and their abilities. So I kind of present the case for why I think this is important. And then the guts of it is kind of explaining those mental mechanics. And then the last chapter is called the mental toolbox. And that's meant to give athletes specific things to do, meaning worksheets, exercises, things to do to take it out of this realm. Sometimes the mental game seems to be something we just talk about kind of at this intellectual level. And it's like, no, here's some things you can do to learn how to manage your confidence and things like that. So really it's meant to present the case for needing to build the mental game in our developing athletes, explain what that is and how to do it, and then give them some tools to get them started.
So beneficial. I mean, so beneficial for any athlete that has issues with any of those five categories. And I know for me, even not for Dusty as much, but for me, every time before I would go out to the football field, I'd have to throw up before games. And I didn't describe it as anxious, but I was excited and I wanted to perform well. And I was always this perfectionist that, paid attention to detail. I wanted everything to work out perfectly. And some of that, that was like my biggest weakness sometimes too, because like what you said during a game, if I made a mistake, it was kind of like I thought about that mistake maybe a little too much, or I thought about, what someone else was thinking about. Like, because our dad was kind of hard on us growing up too. It was like, I don't know what he thinks of my mistake there too.
Right.
So much later on, but it was definitely in there in the middle years. Yeah. And I think, the book is really neat. I think because, everyone thinks of psychology as maybe somebody having a problem versus somebody trying to perform better. Right. It's like, oh, I've got a problem. I'm seeing a psychologist. Well, wait a minute. Maybe that person is progressing. Right. So our listeners, this book was written. This is really cool because, looking back, if we would have had something to go off of to maybe as a component to help us while we're stressing through school, right? Trying to be the cool high school guy at school or whatever it was, right? Along with trying to be a better football player, quarterback. I mean, that would have been great. That would have taken off. So
absolutely.
Definitely appreciate you talking about that, and listeners go and buy that book for sure.
And let's really quick, because that was a great comment. Most of the athletes I see they're not coming to me because they have problems. They're coming because they know the mental game is important. They've heard it for years. And it's a third gear that they want to understand how to develop it. You know, the guys that come to you guys for your expertise aren't coming because they have, you know, throwing problems. They're coming because they want to be the best quarterback they can possibly be. It's very growth oriented. It isn't about fixing stuff. It's about training athletes.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. Pete, before we jump off here, if to give people a preview of maybe a few things that they can do, just quick fixes. If I have anxiety, maybe I can do a breathing exercise. If I'm thinking negatively, maybe I can think about this. What would be three tips that you would give young athletes to do in order to help with their mindset?
Well, so you mentioned two things right there. So if I have anxiety, the breathing can be really helpful. But what I want athletes and really anybody to understand is that our feelings come from our thoughts. So if I'm anxious, we got to learn to kind of catch that anxiety and just experience it, not as a threat, but as an indication that where was my thinking? Because if I'm anxious before a game, I'm probably what I call time traveling. I'm worried about, am I going to make a mistake? What if I don't play well? So we just talk about, you know, getting back to your feet, be in the present, focus on process. So we want to make sure, you know, one thing I guess that might fit here is I want to work with every one of my athletes. And I say, you need to know these three things because this can become your North Star. This can be something that helps you when you're anxious, helps you with your confidence. And that is to have a good self-awareness. And that's what we talk about, your identity. Who are you as an athlete, right? Sometimes we worry about who or not. We look around, he's so big, he's so fast, but everybody's got their skill set. You got to play to your strengths. So you need to know, who am I as an athlete? Am I big and strong? Am I quick? Am I smart? Do I see the field well? And be really clear on that and keep it simple. The brain loves simple. So two or three things that sum up your identity. What's my job, right? What if basically the way I ask this question is, if you were to say, Dr. Pete, if I go out and I do these two or three things, if I do my job, it'll be a good game. It doesn't guarantee great stats necessarily. It doesn't mean we win, but if I go out and I do my job, right, then I'm going to be good. And I'll help my team. And the third is to understand your approach. How do you need to approach the when you play? What does that look like? I ask athletes, when you play great, what do you look like? Right? If before the game you need to be off by yourself, then that's who you are. That's your approach. Then make sure you build a routine that allows for that. If getting off by yourself and thinking about the game, sometimes athletes think, well, that's what I need to do. I want to be a serious athlete, so I'm going to go get all, you know, serious and intense. It might be the worst thing they should do. Maybe they need to stay loose, listen to music, talk to teammates, right? What would you look like on the field? Are you mechanical? What's your tempo? What pace do you play at? Because what happens when we struggle or when we're nervous, we get away from that. The quarterback that throws the pick starts to maybe move with a different tempo or starts to carry himself differently. And that's going to send a message to the brain that says something's wrong. So when we know who we are, what we need to do and how we need to do it, and we're nervous, it's as simple as saying, hey, just get back to being you and do your job and do it your way. If I've struggled in the first half, it's just, and you know those things, you just got to remind yourself, get back out there and be Pete Temple, do your job and do it your way. And it's kind of your North Star.
That's gold. Yeah. I mean, that's so great. And even catching it, you said, you know, catching it before you even have to do the breathing exercises, you know, just right. Changing your mind. Yeah,
people make anxiety into a monster, and anxiety won't tackle you. So you acknowledge it. I'm nervous. Of course, it's a big game. And you just bring yourself back to the present. You know, all right, so what do I need to do? What's my process? If we start thinking, oh my gosh, what if I get more nervous? What if I stay nervous? Now we're turning it into a monster. Everybody's going to be nervous. So use it as some way to indicate that you're time traveling. You're getting ahead of yourself. You can time travel backwards too. Last time I didn't play very well. Just find your feet. And know what you need to do, and that usually locks you in pretty good.
You know, funny story real quick before we get off here, but whenever I used to give presentations in front of a group, so like public speaking, I would start to sweat really bad, right? But then, like me sweating, I would constantly think about, like, I hope these people don't see me sweating, which would make me sweat more, right? So it's kind of idea of this cycle of, if I start to think about my anxiety, it's going to get worse. But if I stop that in its tracks by bringing myself back to the present, I just take a deep breath and just go and just rely on preparation and confidence and resilience, all those things you talked about before. So,
right. Yeah.
Really cool. So, you know, Pete, we always ask our guests, you know, who are three people who have, you know, made you into the person that you are today, and why?
Well, okay. And I don't know if I'm going to go with people. I mean, well, I'll go with one. So my faith is important to me. So I would say God is certainly, you know, been with me through everything. And that's kind of part of my true north. I also blessed with a great family, family that loves sports, was encouraging and, you know, let me do my thing. And I, you know, that really shaped me. And then the family I've gathered together now, I have a spectacular wife who I love very much. And she's really supportive, and two kids that are good athletes and great kids. And they just really bring me joy and inspire me. And so I would say that's about all I need.
That is all you need. That's all anybody needs. Dr. Pete, if people want to get in touch with you, you know, through social media or email or anything, where can they reach you at?
Okay. Well, if they're interested in just kind of learning more about the book, we've got a site set up for that. And that's www.playinginthebox.com. If they're interested in learning more about the practice that I have with athletes is called Mind's Eye Sports Performance. And that's www.mindseyesports.com. That's also a place they can reach out to me directly if they have questions. And if they're interested in following me, not that I necessarily always have something great to put on Twitter, but I am at Playing in the Box.
Awesome. And we'll also have those in the show notes for our listeners as well, Pete.
Okay.
But thank you again for coming on with us. And, you know, hopefully our listeners, you know, got a lot of good from this episode, and hopefully we can get you on it back here sometime soon.
Anytime. I had a lot of fun. Thank you guys.
Thank you for tuning into the QB Docs podcast. If you'd like to know more about the QB Docs, go check out our website at theqbdocs.com. That's theqbdocs.com. Also, if you are someone who wants to know more about the QB position, go check out our Instagram, Facebook, or subscribe to our YouTube channel at the QB Docs. Again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.